Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on taxes when we come back. You know, with an income of $50,000 a year, you pay $7,650 in Social Security taxes. That's if you're self-employed and you're paying the 15.3% rate. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 from your $50,000 income and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying 17% of the $50,000 twice? Now, you know the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of $50,000 in Social Security tax once. Then they make you pay 17% of the same $50,000 in income tax twice. That means you pay 17% of the original $7,650 twice. And that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from you and everyone else who pays this tax. Now, what would you think if Sears, Penny's, or your credit card company charged you twice like Social Security and the IRS does? Now, isn't that just kind of real special? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about the Social Security account number. Most people see Social Security as a retirement program. And indeed, that's what it started off to be in 1935. But Social Security, like your driver's license, is more than just a competency test. It's more than it's advertised to be. And in 1964, Congress added a new wrinkle to the Social Security number. It became your taxpayer identification number. So there's two ways to become a taxpayer. You can go down and apply for a taxpayer identification number. That's called your TIN number. Or you can get a Social Security number. And nearly everybody has a Social Security number now from birth. They give them to you right there in the hospital when you're born. And since mom and dad have one, they think that children should have them also. Nearly everybody in America has a Social Security number. 14 million of us don't, but most people believe that it's the law. You have to have a Social Security number. And while that's a fiction, and it isn't the law, and you don't have to have a Social Security number, everybody wants one because you can't work without one. It reminds me of Revelation chapter 13, without the mark of the beast, you can't buy, sell, or trade. Well, if you can't work, then you can't sell your labor. So it's a catch-22. And those people who apply for and receive a Social Security number have applied for and received a privilege from government, for which an excise tax can be levied. And Social Security goes hand in hand with the income tax, and the income tax is an excise tax. And proof of your participation is your Social Security account number. Now, back in the early 1940s, a case was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court called Wickard versus Filburn. Wickard versus Filburn. And the court established a very far-reaching policy, a policy decision, in which the court said that it's hardly lack of due process or equal protection of the law for government to regulate that which it subsidizes. You've heard the old story that there's no free lunch. Well, when government gives you the free lunch, don't be surprised then if government regulates that which it subsidizes. Any privilege, any benefit that you take from government has a reciprocity contract that attaches to it. And there are no exceptions. Therefore, the Social Security account number is a quasi-license or a contract to work for all of those who want to work for the state or one of its corporations, and it has the effect of extending the state franchise to the employee. Participation in the Social Security welfare system, as well as the privilege to receive entitlements such as unemployment insurance, welfare, food stamps, or aid to families with dependent children, or some other program, are congressionally granted benefits or privileges which accrue to participants of Social Security. Now, any privilege granted by government is a proper subject of taxation, and the benefits are, in effect, subsidies of certain privileges such as minimum wage or unemployment and compensation insurance. There are 108 benefits provided under the Social Security program, and the costs of these benefits can be levied upon such privileges as an indirect or excise tax that we call the income tax. Now, since the corporation is nothing more than an extension of the state, employees of corporations can be forced to voluntarily obtain a Social Security number as a federal license to work for a corporation, and it is a franchise. And you can be forced to voluntarily accept and use Federal Reserve notes in payment of the consideration or just compensation of the debt which arises among and or between the employee, the corporation, and the federal government. And third, you can be forced to pay the federal tax debt arising from this franchise in Federal Reserve notes. You can be compelled to provide information. You can be compelled to file a return. And you can be compelled to file an IRS W-4 form upon employment, which is a contract of franchise, and it's an expectation and a promise of payment of the tax due at year's end. Now, the reason that the Social Security account number operates as a franchise tax is that, first, the payments are matched by the employer, which is a state-created corporation, resulting in reduced net tax revenue by way of deductions. Second, these payments from the employee and the corporation go into the general fund, and they do not go into a special protective fiduciary fund. And third, the expectations of the employee are addressed to receiving benefits from the general fund, which is a franchise in itself, because when we retire on Social Security, we are paid out of the general tax revenues from the general fund. It is not an annuity. Social Security is not insurance. Social Security is a social welfare scheme. and the Social Security account number operates as a taxable franchise. And there are no property rights in Social Security. And where there are benefits or entitlements without property or property rights, there has to be a franchise. And a franchise is a privilege. And Social Security is a privilege granted by government, and the income tax is one of the taxes that is used to pay for that franchise. And in every known court case regarding state compulsory insurance benefit programs dealing with withholding, such as unemployment compensation, disability insurance, etc., etc., corporations are involved. And the cases in effect hold that a corporation may be compelled to withhold and to otherwise participate in such programs. Now, the application and receipt of a Social Security account number by a person or individual is the admission of jurisdiction by the IRS over the property, the interests, and the endeavors of that person or individual. Now, we the people formed the U.S. government. But the IRS and the 1040 form is a negotiable instrument in a form of a revivable installment note, and the installments are due annually on any state-created franchise, the payment upon which is directly proportional to the extent to which the franchise is exercised as measured by your net income. As the privilege of exercising corporate franchise is that for which the state requires this excise tax, as per USCA 59-13-1, which is an annual tax. Now, the mere existence of a corporation subjects that corporation to the tax. The amount of the tax is computed according to the extent to which the franchise is exercised, as measured by the net income derived from such use. Excise taxes can only be applicable to corporations and enfranchised persons. However, the excise tax is not applicable to persons not accepting state-granted franchises. Now, that's very important, boys and girls. If you don't accept these government handouts, you have no obligation to pay for them. Conversely, if you are eligible for, you don't have to draw unemployment insurance to be eligible for unemployment insurance. And if you're eligible for unemployment insurance, you owe the tax. Now, I'm not eligible for unemployment insurance. I'm not eligible for Social Security. I'm not eligible for the government-created benefits. I took myself off of the eligibility list. I'm not the only one. I'm not the only American who has not taken the free lunch. There are a few others of us, not many, but a few. Don't complain when government charges you a fee for the services that the government delivers. I got to tell you a quick story here. In the case of Wickard versus Filburn, and the court said in the case, it's hardly lack of due process or equal protection of the law for government to regulate that which it subsidizes, came out in 1942, right at the beginning of the New Deal, Fair Deal program. And the Department of Agriculture, seeking to control the agricultural output of American farmers, came up with a price support program supported by tax dollars. The scheme worked like this. The price of wheat on the open market was 50 cents a bushel. So the government came in with taxpayer money and offered farmers 96 cents a bushel if they would sign up for the Agricultural Stabilization Act. Mr. Phil Byrne decided he'd do that. After all, why shouldn't he participate in the free lunch at taxpayer expense? So in 1938, he went down and signed up. And as a result of that, he received an allotment of 20 acres of wheat. Now, prior to 1938 and prior to signing this contract, Mr. Filburn could grow 40 acres of wheat or 80 acres of wheat or 160 acres of wheat if he so desired. But he could only get 50 cents a bushel for whatever wheat he produced, which was marginal, if not a losing proposition. But 96 cents a bushel for wheat would produce a profit. But in order to be profitable in wheat and get 96 cents a bushel, he had to agree to limit his production to 20 acres. And he signed the contract and he agreed. So he collected his benefits for 20 acres of wheat in 1939, 1940, 1941. But somewhere around 1941, Mr. Filburn bought some turkeys, and he planted 40 acres of wheat. 40, not 20, 40. And he harvested the 40 acres of wheat, but he only sold 20 acres of the wheat, and he fed the other 20 acres of wheat to his turkeys. Well, when the Secretary of Agriculture, Mr. Wickard, heard about this, he decided that that was a breach of contract, and he fined Mr. Filburn $235 plus forfeiture of his wheat. And Mr. Filburn argued this case clear to the United States Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court came back and they said, now look, the purpose of this program was to regulate and control the production of wheat. And you agreed to be regulated and controlled when you signed the contract, and you agreed to the limitations of 20 acres of wheat. If you had followed that contract and raised turkeys, you would have either, one, fed the turkeys the 20-acre allotment, or two, you would have gone into the marketplace and you would have bought 20 acres of wheat to feed the turkeys, which is the intention of Congress and the intention of the Department of Agriculture. It's to limit the production of wheat, to control the production, to control the price. And you broke the contract. And they went on to say it's hardly lack of due process or equal protection of the law for government to regulate that which it subsidizes. Now, boys and girls, if you want to participate in any free lunch, you should expect to be regulated and controlled. The mere existence of a corporation subjects the corporation to the tax. In cases represented by Hale versus Hinkle in 201 U.S. 43, on page 74 show plainly that an enfranchised person is regulatable and can be compelled as a matter of law to do that which his creator, the state, requires of him, but that the unenfranchised person cannot be so regulated as he receives nothing from the state. Now, the United States government is, in fact, a corporation, and we the people formed that corporation. We the people are the creator of that corporation. And the United States of America's corporate charter is the United States Constitution. And as the government tries to regulate and protect itself from its creations, the corporations, it is doing no more than the patriots who are trying to regulate and protect themselves from the creation which we, the people, created, our own government. The United States government is nothing more than a corporation. Just as in the commercial world, the corporate enterprises are busily engaged in competing with private individuals for economic, social, and political power. Now, the United States corporation, the United States of America, is concerned about being gobbled up by its own corporate creatures. President Eisenhower called it the military-industrial complex. Now, when an individual merges his interests with those which are corporate in nature, by taking a job with General Motors, those interests which are otherwise exempt to a common law freeman now become taxable. Therefore, when we become a corporate employee, those wages are taxable. And this holds true when more than one individual, a class of two or more individuals, or a group of two or more combine their assets or combine their capital with intent of operating to create a gain. That group, that class, that association is taxable as a corporation, even though it is not recognized as a corporation under state statutes. The word taxpayer appears in almost every code, statute, and decision. Codes and cases must relate to a taxpayer and not to a non-taxpayer. This also implies that some persons may well be exempt or may be immune from this income tax. Now, if there is an up, there must be a down. If there is a black, then there must be a white. And if there is a taxpayer, there must be a non-taxpayer. Now, some persons are exempt under statute, which creates rights or entitlements such as Social Security, where none existed before. A common law should be strictly construed and determined, and in determining the statutes of persons who are entitled or the status of persons who are entitled to benefits and who are bound by associated duties to pay, get an account, or pay a tax. Persons are not subject to statutes unless clearly within their intent and wording. Acts that specifically mentioned in a statute are deemed to be outside the operation of the statute. Making so many dollars per year a requirement for filing does not even imply jurisdiction of the IRS over the unenfranchised individual, because the same is not clearly expressed as in the above cases or statutes. Where penal, criminal, or quasi-criminal statutes are construed, they are to be construed against the government, excluding those not expressly set out. The possession of a written instrument, such as the IRS 1040 form, the W-4 form, or Social Security number, providing for payment of money, is prima facie evidence that the debt contracted therein is unpaid. The IRS 1040 return is never surrendered after payment, such as the mortgage or promissory note when you make the final payment on your house. This, then, is, as a matter of common law, the common law of the states, which governs federal practices in the absence of federal law in the matter. If there is no federal statute or case to the contrary, additionally, payment on the return, that is the 1040 form, implies that there is a voluntary act of the debtor looking to the satisfaction in whole or in part of the demand which is being made against him by government. The tender of a written instrument, a 1040 form, implies recognition of an underlying debt and is tendered in discharge of an existing debt. So when a 1040 form is filed, that person becomes a party to the Social Security franchise and an admission of a debt due to the federal government and a duty to file, a duty to pay, and a duty to provide information forever, unless a dissolution of corporate existence is granted, or we otherwise prove that a corporate or quasi-corporate existence or franchise does not exist. Now, by putting into practice our common law and refusing any government franchise in Social Security or in unemployment insurance, or in any other government entitlement, we can reclaim our individual rights, our individual property, and our individual liberties as set out in Hale v. Hinkle, cited at 201 U.S. 43 on page 74. those who partake of the free lunch are not free. And it is hardly lack of due process or equal protection of the law for the government to regulate that which it subsidizes. Remember Wickard versus Filburn, it's cited at 317 U.S. 111. Wickard versus Filburn, 317 U.S. 111. Taxation is a reasonable means by which regulation may be effected. And it appears that regulation is intended to prevent poverty in our old age before or due to a loss of spouse, a loss of job, or some other calamity. This is accomplished under the Social Security Act. And it should be observed that Social Security means private insecurity. And finally, it means social insecurity in the final analysis. Thus, the form and operation of the law is false, and the true intent and operation of the Social Security Act and the Income Tax Act is destruction of the individual and the ultimate destruction of society and the ultimate destruction of the nation of the United States of America. Now, the method is ominous, but covert in its operation and form. If benefits to the public or a class are to be financed, then that class or that public may be taxed or in some way required to pay for those goods and services delivered by government. And when a class benefits from the general fund and not from a private or separate fiduciary program or trust, then the power to tax, the power to regulate, is not limited. Now, some examples of government-granted privileges that are regulated and taxed under the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8 are mortgages, Social Security, Federal Reserve notes, government-granted privileges, equitable interests, bank and corporate credit cards, stocks and negotiable instruments, bonds, public business licenses, permits, public interest professions, interest-bearing accounts, checks, insurance, marriage licenses, and citizenship. Now, there are 16 primary connecting links that you have with the Roman civil law. It's the civil law and income versus the common law and increase. Now, you've heard me mention that from time to time. Property is the holy grail of law. Property is protected by the Ten Commandments. Property is protected by thou shalt not steal. Property is protected by two statutes that tell us that you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. Unjust weights and balances, boys and girls, are stocks and bonds, mortgages, interest-bearing accounts, checks, credit cards, mortgages. Now, if you're going to participate in these programs, then you should expect to be regulated. You should expect to be taxed. These are common law crimes. They're the exact opposite of the Mosaic law. They're the exact opposite to the Ten Commandments. Let me give you an illustration. The common law, predicated upon property and increase, as opposed to the civil law, which is predicated upon profit and income, works like this. The common law holds land and fee simple, not by mortgage. The common law and increase holds labor as property, which is the exact opposite to Social Security, which holds that labor comes from, and as the old communist expression goes, from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. The common law on increase is predicated upon substance, the opposite to substance or Federal Reserve notes. Common law on increase is predicated upon inalienable rights, not government-granted privileges. The common law on increase is predicated upon property, not mere equitable interests. The common law is predicated upon gold and silver, not bank and corporate credit cards. The common law is predicated upon private ownership, not stocks and negotiable instruments. The common law works upon private property, not bonds. It works upon private business, not public business licenses. The common law works upon private rights, not permits and permission. The common law works upon common law occupations, not public interest professions. The common law works upon substance and chattels, not interest-bearing accounts. The common law works upon warehouse receipts and checks, spelled C-H-E-Q-U-E-S, not checks, spelled C-H-E-C-K-S. The common law works upon individual responsibility, not limited liability in insurance. The common law works upon patriarchal family, not marriage license. And the common law on increase works upon denizens and denizenship, not upon citizens and citizenship. Now there's a nexus, there's a connecting link between the income tax and individuals. And there is a nexus or a connecting link between those same individuals and private property and increase. It's a choice that we make. It's a choice that you make. In most people's cases, they got a Social Security number when they were born in the hospital. They never had a choice. Nobody in public school or college ever explained to you that there is a choice to be made and that you've made your choice or your choice was made for you. And nobody ever told you. There is a choice that you could make if you so desired. Now, you can choose the Ten Commandments or you can choose the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. You can choose property and property rights or you can choose the abolition of property and property rights. You can choose the Eighth Commandment and Thou Shalt Not Steal or you can choose the First Plank to the Communist Manifesto which calls for the abolition of all right to private property. It's your choice to make. It's your call. But don't complain about the results. All right, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. 8 schools in all. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 4967. And Let me remind you that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management or staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember the website georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right. I'm talking about the income tax, Social Security tax, unemployment insurance tax. I mean, there's just tax, 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 isn't there? And we all know the government tax is anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. Now, I mentioned the Communist Manifesto. And we ought to take a look at communism because we Americans are practitioners of communism. We have adopted communism here in the United States as if we invented it. I'm not sure that we didn't invent it, but it wasn't a part and parcel with the intent of our founding fathers in 1787. Although communism, also known as socialism or welfare stateism, has been around for thousands of years. Welfare stateism is a paternalistic outlook or view that people in general are unable to take care of themselves, unable to manage their own affairs. And for that reason, they need a king. They need a government. They need a guardian in a guardian-ward relationship that they can look to in times of stress or in times of need, and their guardian will come to the fore and take care of them. Now, Americans, after our revolution, or probably even prior to our revolution in the colonies, took the view that individuals were responsible for their own actions and responsible for their own needs and responsible for their own lives. That responsibility, individual responsibility, was paramount to individual families and in our states and our society. Individual responsibility. Now, today, we Americans do not take that kind of responsibility very seriously. If we're unemployed, we expect government to find us a job. And if they don't find us a job, we expect government to take care of us whether we work or not. It's a given. We expect that government is going to take care of us, such as in New Orleans. In 1900, a hurricane struck Galveston, Texas. The government didn't come down there and rebuild Galveston for those people. Those people got up on their feet and rebuilt Galveston themselves. Now, it is true that governments have always come in to do some help. But the concepts that have developed over the last 100 years in the United States is that FEMA or some government agency somewhere owes it to us to take care of us. That the government owes it to us to rebuild New Orleans. The government owes it to us to educate us and to give us a college degree. That hasn't always been the case. But it certainly is the case today. Now, government has nothing, owns nothing, and produces nothing, and has no wealth. There isn't a government in the world that has any wealth. All wealth that government has, it first takes from the people, the citizens and the taxpayers. The government doesn't produce any automobiles. They drive automobiles, they take automobiles, they use automobiles, but they don't produce any. All of the automobiles that government uses are produced by Ford and General Motors and Toyota and Chrysler and everybody else. Government doesn't have any money. They have the license to create the money, and they got that power, that authority, from the franchisors. The government is a franchisee. The government is created by the people. And the government has the power to tax the people because the people gave the government the power to tax them. It's not the other way around. Government maintains an army for the purposes of protecting the people from foreign occupation or from foreign interference. But the money, the wealth that the government uses to pay that army comes from the people. It doesn't come from the government. And all of the goods and services that government uses, the tanks that they buy, the airplanes that they buy, and that they use in this endeavor, come from the people who produce the airplanes and the tanks and the automobiles and the gasoline and everything that goes in. And yet, we look to government as the benefactor who is going to take care of us in every need that we might develop. This concept comes from a foreign and alien ideology called communism today. Now, whether you call it paternalism or socialism or welfareism or communism, Nazism, socialism, you know, fascism, these isms, these ideologies, all have at their root the concept that government has a duty to take care of us. But in reality, it is us that takes care of the government. And government doesn't have anything to give us until they first take it away from us. Government, in reality, is like a parasite, a tick in a dog's ear. The dog can live without the parasite. The parasite cannot live without the dog. The people can live without government, but government cannot live without people. Now, the first plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for the abolition of property and land and the application of all rent of land to public purposes. That violates Leviticus 25, verse 23, that says, "The land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine and your strangers and sojourners with me." This abolition of property and land and the application of all rent of land to public purposes has been accomplished in the United States. And the people of the United States are the chattel property of this government, this Frankenstein monster that we call government, and we're owned by the state. And we're all totally dependent upon the state. And the state, in order to finance that dependence, has a heavy progressive or graduated income tax, the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. And can you tell me anywhere in America that this income tax isn't pervasive at both the state and federal level? Now, this violates this tithing law, and in Malachi 3, verses 8 through 12, God reminds us, "Will a man rob God? And yet you have robbed me," he says. But you say, "Well, wherein have we robbed you, God?" And he responds, "In tithes and offerings." Boys and girls, we have replaced tithing and offerings with the income tax and Social Security. So you shouldn't be surprised then that the benefits that we receive from God under the Ten Commandments have been terminated, and the benefits and the obligations that we receive from government have been exacerbated. The third plank calls for the abolition of all right of inheritance. We call it the death tax in this country, but there is an inheritance law in the Bible, and we don't practice the inheritance law of the Scriptures. We don't practice the duty of the firstborn or patriarchal family. We now have marriage licenses. We now have state-created three-party limited general partnerships in our marriage, and the state controls it. The fourth plank calls for the confiscation of property of immigrants and rebels. And then we complain bitterly when the government comes in and takes our property in the form of income tax or corporate and franchise tax or fines and levies and penalties. The fifth point calls for the centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly. Now that violates thou shalt not steal, and it violates this statute in Deuteronomy 25:13-16, which says, you shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Eternal your God gives you, for all that do such things and all that do unrighteously are an abomination unto the Eternal your God. We have replaced gold and silver, which our God gave us as a monetary system and which our founding fathers gave us in Article 1, Section 10 of our Constitution that says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Our conclusion was that both God and our founding fathers did not understand economics and finance. And we bought into the Federal Reserve Program. We bought into paper money and plastic gold cards, they call them, or platinum cards. Those cards are plastic. They're not gold, and they're not platinum, and they're not even close. They're unjust weights and balances for which you are now paying one-third of everything that you create and produce in the form of income and Social Security taxes. Now, you wanted plastic money, and you got it. And the cost for the plastic money and the cost for Federal Reserve notes is one-third of everything you create and produce. I hope it's well worth it. Now, the sixth point calls for the centralization of the means of communication and transport in the hands of the state. We now have the Federal Communications Commission with regulations and executive orders. Now, our God told us, you shall make no covenants. That's a contract, a covenant is. You shall make no contracts with them, nor with their gods. And they shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you to sin against me. Because if you serve their gods, it'll surely be a snare unto you. Have you noticed that we have driver's licenses, marriage licenses, business licenses, communications licenses? We're licensed for everything that we want to do from the time we get up in the morning until the time we go to bed at night. A license is permission to do something that's otherwise illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. And boys and girls, there's nothing inherently criminal about marriage. So why did you get a marriage license? There's nothing inherently criminal about travel. So why did you get a driver's license? There's nothing inherently criminal about business, but why did you get a business license? And it's because of the way you conduct your marriage, the way you conduct your business, the way you conduct your travel. That's why you have a license. Because you want to break the law. You want to break the law of God. In order to do that, the state comes in and says, well, if you want to break the law of God, let us help you. Let us give you a license. Let's do it. Let's do it right. The seventh plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for the extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state and the bringing into cultivation of wastelands and the improvement of the soil generally in accordance with a common plan. Well, extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state are called corporations. And the bringing into cultivation of waste lands in Idaho is called the Desert Land Entry Act. And the improvement of the soil generally in accordance with a common plan comes from the Department of Agriculture. And they're called soil conservation districts. Got anything like that where you live? Corporations? Desert Land Entry Acts? Or some other government control over your land, like Endangered Species Act and soil conservation districts. And all of this replaces the Jubilee and land Sabbaths, We don't practice jubilees and land Sabbaths. Why, we've got a Department of Agriculture, and we've got modern, communist, seventh plank technology. Now, the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for equal liability of all to labor and the establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. Boys and girls, that's Social Security. That's your national industrial army. Everybody belongs to it. Don't leave home without it. You can't work without a Social Security number. Ninth plank calls for the combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries and the gradual abolition of the distinction between town and country by a more equitable distribution of population over the country. Well, let me explain that one to you. That one's a little more obfuscated. But back in 1920, the population of the United States was approximately 100 million people. Out of 100 million people, 44 million, or pretty near half, of the people lived on the land. The government put a policy into place. And slowly but surely, they enticed us off of the land and into the cities, where we became industrial workers for Henry Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler. And little by little, by 1940, the population of people living on the land had dropped to about 32 million. By 1950, it had dropped to 15 million. By 1969, it had dropped to 6 million. These are the people that live on the land producing our food. And by 2000, it had dropped to about 3 million. Today, it's 1,900,000. I saw some statistics the other day. We now have more people locked up and incarcerated in our prisons and jails than we have farmers living on the land. We have become a nation of urbanites and city dwellers, totally divorced now from the land, totally divorced from the source of food, clothing, and shelter. Remember, all wealth comes out of the ground. We have now divorced ourselves from all ground, all land. First plank, the abolition of all right to land. We have followed that principle, and now we are a nation of landless peasants, locked up in our cities, regulated and controlled by our masters, our government. As old William Bendix used to say, what a revolting development this has turned out to be. And the tenth plank calls for the free education for all children in public schools and the abolition of children's factory labor in its present form and the combination of education with industrial production. So here's what we did. We established free education for all children in public schools. It's called the public school system. Notice the word free education. Excuse me? Free education. The public school system costs approximately $7,000 per child on average nationwide. Private school costs on average nationwide $2,700 a year, and private education in-home schooling costs on average $550 a year. Now explain to me how the $7,000 a year versus $2,500 or $2,700 versus $500 can be called free public education. Boys and girls, when you pay taxes, that's not free. $7,000 a year is 14 times what it costs to educate a child at home. That's not free. $7,000 is approximately 3 times what it costs to send your kid to a private school. That's not free. Government not only isn't free, government is a liar. Now, there's another element to this, which talks about communism being dead. And I wanted to give you a couple of three citations here from Mikhail Gorbachev. You remember him? Mikhail Gorbachev. He used to be the premier or prime minister. I forgot how they call that or what they call him there in Russia. But this guy came from Russia. He's the guy that's got this birthmark on his forehead. Well, he left Russia and he's in the Presidio. He lives in San Francisco, California. not exactly sure what he does out there in California, but he said, "Gentlemen, comrades, do not be concerned about all you hear about glasnost and perestroika and democracy in the coming years. They are primarily for outward consumption. There will be no significant internal changes in the Soviet Union other than for cosmetic purposes. Our purpose is to disarm the Americans and let them fall asleep." Mikhail Gorbachev, in a speech to the Soviet Politburo in November of 1987. 2 years, remember, before the collapse of the Soviet Union. Boys and girls, the collapse of the Soviet Union is a ruse. They haven't disarmed. The communists in Russia, boys and girls, have not adopted the Ten Commandments or the Ten Principles of our Bill of Rights. In the contest that we called the Cold War, in which the values of America were set before the world in opposition to the values of communism and the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, boys and girls, there is no competition. The communists won the Cold War hands down. Not only are they practicing communism in Russia and practicing communism in China, we are practicing communism in America, and you Europeans are practicing communism in Europe, you Canadians are practicing communism in Canada, and you Australians and New Zealanders are practicing communism in Australia and New Zealand. You're not practicing the Ten Commandments. You're practicing communists. Gorbachev said, "Don't pay any attention to what you hear concerning democracy." George Bush made an observation one time. And essentially, our military and other resources are being used by the CFR, the globalists, as the spearhead of the New World Order. Not as global Pax Americana, as there is nothing American about it, but as an extension of the Soviet model of communist expansionism. This is to lay the foundations by force for a one-world government under a socialist United Nations administration. That is core of the Bush doctrine, and it was his father's agenda. It is the agenda of all globalists at the top levels, and George Bush Sr. admitted it in the following statements. Well, in the following statements, we'll take that up next time, right here, on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. So let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by pre-arrangement. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.